For many years, we on the left have been in the dark about how to communicate important issues to Americans, sticking to the same dry, boring formula that turns off many listeners.
Not anymore!
I had a friend who kept a candle in his pocket. He used to touch it when the wind was blowing high. I guess it made him feel like he could duck the system. And when it figured out, we laid him down to die. I turn on the light, turn on a billion blinding, brilliant white incendiary lights. Yeah, I'll beat them in the night. I'll burn relentlessly until my tooth was dry.
Oh yeah, welcome to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your host, Joe Vecchio. We got a lot of things going on today. We got the Bush administration pulling the usual crap. We got a governor's race in California when we shouldn't be having one. And of course, we've got Rush Limbaugh on drugs, all coming up on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Joe Vecchio here. That was Bad Religion, Turn on the Light. That was a really good song. I like that song a lot. How you all doing? Some of you may remember me from Joey Joe Joe Show. Joey and I have unfortunately broken up, but I'm still here, and I'm still interested in talking about stuff, if you're still interested in listening. At least I hope you are. A lot of things going on. Obviously, the big story to me anyway is the outing of the CIA agent, which I think is horribly treasonous, but of course it's just par for the course for the Bush administration. Let me tell you a little bit of my setup here. You know, we just got going, and I just recently got everything set up. Now I have a little, what they call a book PC, which is a little tiny computer, and I've got it set up in a room. The house we're renting, my wife and I, we're just living in a basement apartment here, and we're renting a room from this guy, and we basically have a bedroom, a bathroom, a hallway, and a little kitchen. And we do have access to a larger living room and to the backyard and all that nice stuff. And that's pretty cool. It's a nice little cozy place. The rent is much lower than we're used to paying. Now, if I can only find work, I might actually be able to pay for it. If anybody wants to give a donation, they'd be gladly welcome. You can do a PayPal account. joevec@bellsouth.net is the address for that. Just go into PayPal and register there, and it doesn't cost you anything to do that. And you can help out in any way, shape, or form, because we need the money. And that's just the plain truth of it. You know, I've been out of work for a long time. I had a temp job for a little while. And that didn't work out, unfortunately, because I didn't get picked up permanently, and it made me mad. If you saw the blog, my little note on that on the blog. You know, when I do this show, I have to have the monitor off, because the monitor gives a little high-pitched squeal, and I'm going to turn it on for a second so you can hear the squeal. So listen to that. You can probably hear it right now. And there's a big difference when you say, there we go, and now I'm going to turn the monitor off again. So you hear the difference in how, you know, whatever kind of interference. I don't know how to get rid of that. Someone suggested an inline microphone filter. I do have a program to edit it out, but it edits it out after the fact, and it usually doesn't turn out quite so well, and it tends to distort my voice even more. Maybe I can get some sort of physical inline filter to put in the mic through the microphone before it goes out into the system. I just don't know, and I don't have the money for something like that anyway. So I'm going to muddle through as best I can. I like having a monitor here so I can look at the news or look at whatever and talk about stuff like that from the computer, so I'm just not talking blindly. The thing is set up inside the bedroom. It's got a little desk in the corner with the microphone. I got a little mixer that I got off of eBay, and I got my old computer. And we got a fan going here, and I'm just kind of sitting here talking, and this is a big test run, and we're trying. Now, this is going to be a little bit different from the type of show you're all used to from Joey Jojo, because obviously I don't have a partner, although from time to time I will have interviews with people, and I do want to get people on the show. It's very important for me to have somebody to work with. You know, because, you know, I can sit here and I can just ramble on from time to time, you know, about nothing. I can ramble on about nothing, and I've been known to do that from time to time, and it really turns people off, I know. But now you're here listening to the radio and listening to me ramble on, and I don't know if you're turned off or not. If you are, you probably turned off the show right now. But we're just sitting here, my wife is watching TV, and she's got headphones on. Say hi, honey. Yeah, hi, honey. She's waving and smiles. She's watching an animal show. She loves Animal Planet. She could watch that program. She can watch that all the time. We've got cable because it's all part of the house setup here. You know, the cable was already included in the house. So we're back to watching some of the shows that we used to watch. The place where we were staying over at Phyllis's house, and Phyllis is one of the volunteers for the Dean campaign here in Georgia, and she offered to let us stay at her place until we found some place, until I got some work. And she had digital cable, the satellite, and she had TiVo. And we were watching whatever. You know, the TiVo is great. My God, what's wonderful about TiVo, if for those of you who have never seen it in action or heard of it, TiVo is, pardon me while I scrunch around here, TiVo is like a digital recorder, basically. And not only will it record stuff for you, but rather than just like when you're setting a VCR to set the time, it will actually look for the show. So in other words, if you were recording, say, we were recording Babylon 5, which was coming on 9 o'clock in the morning on Sci-Fi Channel, and it's now coming on sporadically because they've been running a lot of marathons and stuff. But the TiVo will look specifically for Babylon 5, so if it comes on at 10 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock, it's going to record it there. And there are other shows, too, that we were watching. We were watching Michael Palin's Travels, which we keep forgetting to watch. That's on Sunday night at 7. That's a very good show. Michael Palin makes very good documentaries, so we were watching that. So, you know, we had all that going on, of course, but now we're here with cable, and you know, it's okay. And truth to tell, mostly I find myself watching just reruns and sports stuff. You know, I was watching the Braves game last night, and the Braves lost, and I'm pissed off about that. You win 100 games during the season. It takes you 162 games to get to a point, you know, and then it's all blown away in a week. And the Braves do this year after year after year, but it's very annoying because you get these teams that are hot, and then they go nowhere, you know. You know, Arizona won the series a couple of years ago, and where are they now? Florida's finally coming back. They won the series a few years ago, and now they're you know, now they're back in the race, and in fact, they're well up on the San Francisco Giants, another team who won close to 100 games. So what's the use of the regular season, as far as I'm concerned? But anyway, that's just me rambling. I mean, I can go on about that. But I want to talk about the type of show that we're going to have, and I'm going to get to the politics in a minute. Politics is a part of it, and it's going to be a big part of it, but it's not going to be the only thing. I've got a ton of music that I'm going to play DJ to, and we're going to talk about sports, and we're going to talk about entertainment a little bit more than we did on the Joey Jojo show. Joey really didn't like to talk about that as much as I did. He wanted to keep it a strictly political show, which is fine, you know. But I always like to have a little bit more variety in myself because people have other interests, you know. We all know that. Not all of us are strictly into politics. I'm just kind of here, you know. I mean, I talk about politics a lot, and those of you who know me know my feelings, what my feelings are on it. I'm a working-class liberal. To me, there's two different types of liberals. There's working-class liberals, and there's social engineer liberals. I don't really care much for the social engineer liberals. These are the whole peace, love, dope, Birkenstock, as some of them call crowd, the people who, you know, they want to turn around and change the world. I'm less interested in changing the world than I am in just making sure that people who work for a living get the money they deserve. And that's really all I care about, and that they get the care they deserve, and that they work together for their own benefit, as a balance to the power of corporations. And you really do need that balance. And that, to me, that's a key word in how I see liberalism, is just balance. Liberals are are capitalists. We're not against capitalism. What we're against is the abuse of capitalism, and we see the federal government as a natural balance in that. When I write about that, I talk about my three pillars of society: free enterprise, free government, and free press. And by free, I don't mean free as in no cost. I just mean independence, free of influence as much as possible. I mean, you're never going to get the money totally out of politics, but when you cut that down and you make money much less of an influence, more people get a say, and you actually wind up having a better government. Because nowadays, if you look at what we got now, you know, anybody with a ton of money can get in there and make a serious show. I mean, even if they don't necessarily win, they can make a serious show. And of course, my own feeling, and sometimes people are just stupid. I mean, look at what's going on in California with Schwarzenegger. We're going to talk about that in more detail later on. But look at what's going on there. And I mean, it's remarkable that things have gone this way in the country, but sometimes you have to say, well, you know, maybe this is what Americans want, and if they're dumb enough to want it, they deserve what they get. And what they're getting is really, really crappy government by people who are campaigning on, you know, the idea of you don't want politicians running the government. Well, excuse me, you know, one of the things I like to say about this is that, okay, if you would ask people who you would think would be more moral, generally, veterinarians or car repairmen, most people would say that veterinarians are more moral. I mean, it makes sense, you know, they care for animals, that's a good thing, and car repairmen, they tend to screw people a lot, and not all of them are like that, but they do have that reputation. But when your car breaks down, you don't take it to a veterinarian because they're more moral. Politicians do what they have to do for a reason. It's because people expect simplistic answers, and they expect someone to go in there and solve all their problems. Politicians who are too intellectual, people don't trust intellectuals. That's part of what happened to Gore, although, you know, there was still a lot of cheating going on. And, you know, people just have a natural distrust of politicians, and that's fine. Of course, that's all gotten so screwed out of all sense of proportion that, you know, we have this visceral hatred of politicians, and that's ridiculous. You want politicians in politics. You want people who are good at it. And yet you got these people who know absolutely nothing about government and how to run a government, running for office, and essentially screwing things up. Sometimes things like that can work out if you have someone who's charismatic and who is a real people person. Ed Koch, former mayor of New York, was talking about being mayor of New York. He said basically you have to be two things. You got to be a people person and a good administrator. And you could be a good one or the other and still get by, but if you want to be a great mayor or a great politician, you have to be both. And in a lot of cases, you have people who have maybe good people skills, although questionable when it comes to dealing with anybody who disagrees with them, but who don't have any idea of how to be an administrator. And a lot of times on the Democratic side, you have people who are really good administrators who really aren't good people. Anyway. But, you know, we're going to struggle on here with the show, and as the Turn on the Lights song says, that's the name of the song, Turn on the Lights, by a group called Bad Religion. I don't know if I would categorize them as punk rock, but I guess they're pretty close. One of the lines is that, what is one of the lines? You know, I hate it when I lose my track of thought like this. But they talked about how they're going to burn incessantly until the juice runs dry. And that's basically what I'm going to do. I'm going to just burn like a Roman candle, as they said in the song, and we'll see what happens. We're going to play a little song here. This is something I picked up over Kazaa. By the way, I love Kazaa. You know, it's not a question of stealing songs and blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to get into that whole issue. But what I use it for is to find songs I can't really find anywhere else. Stuff I used to hear on Dr. Demento, for example. Stuff that's really not readily available anywhere. And I find a few gems here and there. And this is one of them. This is by Scott Beach. And it's something old. It's from the 60s, I think. And it's called Religion and Politics. Let's listen to it.
Religion and politics often make some people lose all perspective and give way to ranting and raving and carrying on like emotional children. They either refuse to discuss it with reason or else they prefer argumentum ad hominem, which is a hell of a way to conduct a discussion. Well, anyhow, not long ago, I was talking about the elections and how the campaigns were ignoring the issues and sticking instead to invective and personal crap that had nothing to do with the substantive problems of running a government, which is all true, as you know, if you followed the speeches and so-called debates of the candidates. Anyhow, one of the guys I was talking with said not a word in the whole conversation except that the end when he suddenly chuckled and said we were all full of shit and why didn't we go live in Russia or China if that was the way we all hated the United States of America. Next thing you know, the whole blooming discussion was more like a brawl and the epithets flew thick and fast and the noise was incredible. Someone said son of a bitch and I think he said bastard. I couldn't be sure. It was also confusing. Well, anyhow, I was attempting to get it all back on a rational level. I tried, for example, to talk to the one who had started it all and I asked him just what did he mean we were all full of shit. Was he making a statement of fact as he knew it and where was his documentation to back up his claim? I think Socrates would have been proud of the way I refuted his argument, that is, I tried to refute it, but all he could offer by way of rebuttal was more of the same about how we were all full of shit, but he wouldn't say why, he just kept on repeating it, that and the part about Russia and China and communist dupes, and I'll have to confess that I got a bit angry and told him to stuff his ideas up his, which you don't have to tell me is hardly a way to convince anyone in an argument. Then he got salty and threatened to give me a punch in the mouth if I didn't shut up, and I really got hot, and the others did too, and we all beat the shit out of Mr. Conservative, and after all, he had only himself to be blamed. This is still a free country, and anyone telling a fellow like me, brother, you're full of shit, better be good and ready to answer politely when asked if he'd care to say why.
That was Scott Beach. I played that on the Joey Jojo show once. I think one of the guys in the Bart Cop chat room, Fudd, I think it was, said he was listening to that and didn't even know what it was, and he started spitting out his coffee. He was laughing so hard. You know, that was done, I think that was done like in the 60s, and it holds true today, you know, even. And I want to use that to make up a point, because, you know, at the end they talk about beating the crap out of Mr. Conservative, and I feel that way sometimes. You know, sometimes I feel like I just want to go up to some of these people and just punch them in the mouth for being so stupid. But there's my wife. She's coughing. There you go. Very nice cough, honey. She's sitting there. Like I said, she's wearing headphones and wearing a little yellow bathrobe and flashing me right now. And she's just watching TV. Like I said, Animal Planet. And since it's a cozy little room, I don't exactly have a lot of privacy here, but that's okay. I don't need one. My wife and I do well enough. But anyway, there was someone on the Bart Cop forum was talking about how we liberals need to get angry, you know, and, you know, we need to fight back using the same thing. And I've heard this argument back and forth. I've actually worked from both ends of the argument, because sometimes I do get so damn angry because people are stupid, and because a lot of it is just that these guys are just such a bunch of obnoxious asswipes that you really just every now and then want to reach out and slug them. You know, I mean, I'd like for someone to punch George Bush right in the mouth just for being an obnoxious jerk. You know, I'd probably get in trouble for saying that, you know, wanting to assault the president. But I don't want to hurt him a lot. I just wish somebody wiped that damn smirk off his face half the time. Like, I'm a friggin' college frat boy, and I get to be president. Who are you, you know? Never mind that, you know, he hasn't really earned it. Just a lot of money behind them. You know, if you took the money away from the Republican Party, they wouldn't last for 5 minutes. I mean, if you took the political influence that their abundance of wealth gives them, if you took that out of the equation and made them argue on only the issues and stuff like that, they'd never win, because nobody in their right mind would vote for them. But they can spend a lot of money on high-powered market campaigns or create their own magazines and their own news sources, you know. And a lot of times it just makes me angry, because it really has nothing to do with anything but people manipulating the government so that they can make a profit. And that's basically all it is. And I'm hoping the microphone is on. You know, once I recorded a whole segment and I didn't realize the microphone was off. But anyway, the guy was saying about how we need to get angrier and we need to do this and we need to do that. And I'm like, I see what you're saying, but my problem with that is that I can't keep up that anger all the time like these people can. I mean, when you have an irrational hatred like these people have with the Clintons or anybody else, you know, I guess it's easy for them to just stay angry all the time. I can't do that. And I imagine that a lot of you don't want to do that either. And I think one of the differences between us and the hardcore right wings, at least guys like me, is that we don't do this because we feel the need to control other people's lives or to use it as a means of getting more money like they do, or getting more power like they do. We're not interested in that kind of power, really. We do it because we feel we have to defend our own lives and our own lifestyles from those people. That's why a lot of us get involved. And it's more difficult for us because we have other things that we would like to do in our lives. I mean, I personally would rather not spend so much time dealing with politics and trying to get involved. But if you don't get involved, then Bush happens. You know what I'm saying? And these people are dangerous. I mean, let's face it, they are actually the biggest threat to world peace, even than the terrorists, because we do have weapons of mass destruction, and we are willing to use them, as we've seen, for our own personal gain, as opposed to doing it for the safety and security of the world. What they're looking for is the safety and security of their own bank accounts and their hold on power, and that's really what they want. And that's what part of what this whole CIA operative story. I'm not going to get into this in a bunch of details because it's all been gone over by people better than me in much more detail otherwise. So I'm going to boil it down to the basic insights. And it's all really stuff that we of us on the left have been aware of for quite some time with the Bush administration and how they operate. The basic facts of the story are Joseph Wilson, who was a diplomat who worked in Iraq, in fact was the last man out, I believe, before we started the invasion, and who helped to rescue about 100 or so people out of Iraq before the whole thing started, preserve them or save them from Saddam Hussein, basically. He was sent, a couple years ago, he was sent by the CIA to confirm or deny reports that Saddam Hussein was attempting to buy uranium from the country of Niger, or Niger, I think is how he pronounced it when he was on the Nightline show. But he was sent there in order to confirm, you know, whether or not Saddam was buying this stuff. And, you know, what do they call it? Yellow cake uranium, which apparently, and I'm not a nuclear physicist, so don't get me all caught up on all this, but according to his report, that was not true. He wasn't attempting to do that. And even if he was, the fact of the matter is that the type of uranium that they were looking for really couldn't have been used in nuclear weapons. Okay? And he reported that, you know, basically there was no truth to it. But Mr. Bush used that in his State of the Union, just citing British intelligence, which of course had the same faulty information as we had, you know, that Hussein was posing a nuclear threat, which of course was not true, and we knew that. And I'm not gonna sit here and argue the validity and the invalidity of invading Iraq and removing a dangerous man from power. I mean, you know, I'm no fan of Saddam Hussein, despite what John Ashcroft might be telling you. But there's right ways and wrong ways of doing things, and the president lied, and Mr. Bush lied in his State of the Union address. I mean, he knew very well that the threat was at the very least exaggerated, and so did a lot of CIA people, and Mr. Wilson, you know, himself involved in that aspect of it, although I don't believe he's a CIA person himself. He wrote an editorial in the New York Times talking about what he didn't find in Niger. In fact, that was the title of the editorial, What I Didn't Find in Niger. And this pissed the Bush people off because they don't like it when people say things that make them look bad. So what they did was either Mr. Bush himself gave the order, or it came directly out of the office of Karl Rove, who was the political officer for the Bush junta, or however you want to call it. And, you know, he knew that this guy's wife was a CIA operative, Valerie Plame, I think her name was, here is, and they sent out the word to several different journalists, and, you know, basically telling them, hey, this guy's wife is a CIA agent, let's give her name out, you know, and they basically did it in response to that as revenge and as a means to intimidate not just Mr. Wilson, but anybody else who might want to say something bad about the Bush administration, which, as we know, is par for the course for these people. And this is what happened. And, you know, Wilson is all pissed off about it, and he's been on TV talking about it and all that. And the Bush administration is trying to play this into just a thing about leaks, who's leaking the information, and that's not the point. The point is that this is a political administration that uses the power of government to muzzle any kind of dissent, even the most mild. And although Mr. Wilson's was not the mildest form of dissent, they've done just as bad to other people. I mean, look at the whole Freedom Fries thing. I mean, you know, the French and the Germans were simply telling us, look, we just don't want to do this on your timetable. They weren't saying we love Saddam Hussein. They were saying, slow down, take it easy. Like they're trying to tell us we're driving drunk. And if, you know, they're not going to ride with us if we're going to drive like maniacs. And, you know, because we're going to crash. And crash is what we've done. We've lost more people again, you know, more casualties today. So the real story is the operation of the Bush administration and how these people work and what these people do and how they do it. And that's the real story of it. No matter what they try to make an announcement, and you know, the one reporter, of course, that did reveal the name was Robert Novak, otherwise known as Nofax or Novakula, depending on which left wing site you look at, and sometimes they use variations on that. But of course, he's not really a journalist or a reporter; he's just another, you know, right wing hack who puts out whatever form of propaganda that they want him to put out, and that's his job. And I guess he does it very well because he gets paid a lot of money. I'll be a hack for that kind of money, I guess. But it's really kind of sickening that things have come to an end. Let me get a drink of soda here. I drink Mountain Dew. I don't drink liquor. I drink Mountain Dew. I don't drink coffee either. Mountain Dew is like my caffeine. I gotta have a bottle of it every day. You know, I get headaches if I don't get it. You know, caffeine withdrawal. But anyway, that's the story with that. We're going to have another song here, because I'm starting to ramble now. We're going to talk about the California governor's race next, along with some other stuff here on the Cup of Joe radio show.
Yes, it's intermission time once again, folks. Time to go to the kitchen and have that tall glass of something special. How about a sandwich or zesty pizza? We'll be right back in just a few moments after a little bit of a tape change, etc. Thanks so much.
From far beyond the galaxies, I've journeyed to this place to study the behavior patterns of the human race. And I find them highly illogical. Girl meets boy. They fall in love. She says he's everything she's dreamed of. But when they get married, before he's aware, she changes his habits, the way he combs his hair. She changes him to someone he's never been, and then complains he's not like other men. Now really, I find this most illogical. Take the case of your automobiles. Greatest invention since man discovered wheels. Hydromatic overdrive, floor on the floor. Push-button windows, push-button doors. Double-barrel carburetors rush you any place, but you never can find a parking space. Highly illogical. Take the case of modern man. He works all his life, gives it all he can. Saves all his money, works overtime. Pinches every penny, banks every dime. All he can think about is money, but you know that he can't take it with him where he's going to go. Now I find that fascinatingly illogical. Now is the time to journey home to tell of what I've learned. My people, I believe, have every right to be concerned. For in spite of computers and advanced psychology, behavior patterns are still a mystery. I predict the future of this earthly human race is that having made a mess of Earth, they'll move to outer space. Well, there goes the neighborhood. Totally, completely, absolutely, irrevocably, highly illogical.
Does anyone have a Fiat or a Mercury blocking the driveway?
I have a Fiat and a Mercury. Please.
Yeah, that's my car. Fiat and a Mercury. Yeah, I have a Fiat and a Mercury, like that guy in the audience says. That was Martin Mull with the intermission at the beginning and the end. I just kind of split his part. And that was Leonard Nimoy with Highly Illogical. And that's kind of how I view the current situation in California. We've got a situation here where you've got a governor that's very unpopular. Gray Davis has hacked a lot of people off. But he was elected governor just last year, I believe, the year before last. Wasn't that long ago. And as governor, he is hamstrung by two problems. Number one is California has a lot of those propositions, which basically means the citizens tell the government what it can and can't do, and it basically hamstrings the government when something needs to get done and can't get done because the government is hamstrung by these laws. And you had a situation where Texas oil people and Texas energy companies were ripping California off, basically. Enron was one of them, but it wasn't the only one. And, you know, because of it, his popularity went way down. And a guy named Daniel Issa, who was a congressman in California and who wanted to run for governor himself, petitioned a recall. Now, California has a very easy recall law. That was, again, one of those propositions they put in. I think it's only something like 6,000 signatures or something like that and a few million bucks, and you can have a recall effort. And it's ridiculous because it's easy. You know, anybody with enough money, basically. And, of course, the Republican Party, if nothing else, is loaded with money. And, you know, in California, 6,000 or so signatures, that's nothing. I mean, how many people live in California, for crying out loud? It's the most populated state in the country. And so they had the recall. And, of course, you all know how that's going on. And it's looking like that the new governor of California is going to be, God help us, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who has absolutely no experience in politics in any way, shape, or form. Now, me, I personally, I have a rule about stuff like that. At least when it comes to president, I don't vote to anybody who doesn't have any political experience, period. No practical experience as an elected representative. That's why, as much as I liked him, and I do like him, I will never vote for Al Sharpton, because he's never been a mayor, he's never been anything like that. Mr. Schwarzenegger is running for governor of California, which is almost like running for president, considering how large it is. I mean, if you're governor of California or the state of New York, that almost qualifies you as being president anyway, when you consider how many people there are. Even the mayor of New York City almost qualifies, considering how big a city that is as far as number of people are concerned. But here we have a situation where a guy's going to get elected probably with around 30%, when the no vote on the recall is probably going to be higher than that. Probably around maybe 40-45% of the people are going to vote no on a recall. So here we have a situation where a vote on no on recall is basically a vote for Gray Davis, or at least for the political system as we see fit. And so therefore you're looking at Gray Davis is going to get 45% of the vote in the sense of people voting no on the recall. He's probably going to get around 40%. And here's Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's going to get maybe 30-35% of the vote at best, because there's such a large field of candidates, and he's going to become governor. Does this make any sense to anybody? Does this absolutely make any sense to anybody? And Democrats, God bless them, are gearing up for their own recall drive as soon as Schwarzenegger gets in, and good for them. You know, after the 2000 fiasco in Florida, you know, they were distributing these sore loserman bumper stickers. And who's been bigger sore losers than the Republican Party? I mean, they tried to get Bill Clinton kicked out of office because they didn't like him on trumped-up charges that don't have anything to do with his performance. I mean, I was, you want to censure the guy, censure the guy. You say he's been a big jerk, and we think you've acted like an idiot and conduct unbecoming president. That's fine. It's not something you kick somebody out of office for. And here we have a situation where you have a governor who's unpopular because there's only so much he can do, and you're going to kick him out and replace him with somebody who has absolutely no clue of what he's doing, who's dodged every debate except for ones that were pre-scripted. I mean, what the heck is this? What is wrong with this country, and what is wrong with the people of this country? I've said before, I've said time and time again, and some of the dean people get mad at me if they're saying stuff like this, but let's face it, sometimes people are just idiots. I mean, that's why I use that whole illogical song. I mean, it's like, where is the sense in any of this? I mean, you're not even talking about logic. It's just common sense. God almighty. I mean, and here we're going to have, it's like, I don't even have words for it anymore. It's just beyond me that the country has gotten as stupid as it does. And here we bitch about other people, other countries being, incompetent or whatever. And this is the height of it. This is the absolute height of it. And I hope that when Schwarzenegger gets in, and he's going to get in, don't fool yourselves, when he gets in, I hope they do their own recall effort and they start the whole thing all over again. And just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. Just to piss them off. Because sometimes you need to piss people off. Hey, let me get a drink here. Hang on. Oh, that was a good one. I'll keep that in. I'm staying intentionally close to the mic so you can hear I actually am drinking and not, for example, snorting coke or something like that. Now, if you wanted to get rid of the governor, the logical choice, in this sense, would have been to have the lieutenant governor come in, Bustamante. Of course, the Republicans would hate that because Bustamante being Hispanic, that would really get the Hispanic vote out. And, of course, there are a lot of Spanish-speaking people in California. In fact, I believe that they are, if not a majority, close to it. In fact, the white people are going to be in a minority there between the Asians and the Spanish-speaking people. And I say good for that, you know. That's democracy in action. You know, these people come in here and they work hard and they contribute to the economy. And if they applied the same rules that white people apply to everybody else, then they'd start passing laws to discriminate against white people. You know, I almost wish they would start doing stuff like that, because it really upsets me that white people seem to think that they, and they, only they, are the ones who are deserving of rights. So here they are, they're gonna, and of course now they're going to vote for some German guy. And never mind all the Nazi stuff, and never mind all the groping stuff. That doesn't mean a damn thing to the people of California. Okay, it's only means stuff like that when you're talking about Democrats. Only Democrats are not allowed to do stuff like that. Republicans can pretty much get away with anything they want. But it's the whole idea of just getting someone who knows absolutely nothing about being a governor, running an office in any way, shape, or form, and he's going to get put into essentially the second highest position you can get in this country, which is governor of California, the fifth largest economy by itself in the world. You can get away with it in Minnesota, I guess, with Jesse Ventura, because Minnesota is a relatively small economy when in comparison, although from what I understand, Minnesota is a really wonderful place to live in. It's good enough for Mary Tyler Moore, it's good enough for me, right? But California is a different story. And this is all one big train wreck waiting to happen. And they're going to hide it behind slogans, and they're going to hide it behind, you know, publicity stunts. You know, Arnold in his Hummer, I will terminate the budget. You know, so what kind of crap is that? That's why people are voting for him? You know, it's outrageous. You know, and my big thing is that it's all the stupidity of people. I mean, why are they voting for this guy? Why is anybody voting for this guy? Why does anybody vote for Bush? You know, how can they believe all the lies that were said about Al Gore, but none of the truth about George Bush? And it's just a sad commentary on where we've gotten in this country right now. And all I can say is, in the way of hope, is that maybe things will turn around in the next couple of days, but I doubt it. And maybe things will just, in the long run, turn around, because these people will screw things up so badly, people will finally wake up. You know, I wrote an article in May of 2002, and I followed it up with an article later on, but in May 2002, I wrote an article called Waiting for the River to Catch Fire. And in it, I talked about how people tend to wait until the last minute before things happen. And the example I used was when the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland caught fire. I mean, they were dumping crap in this river for ages, dumping pollution and all that stuff, and nobody wanted to do anything about it until the river caught fire, literally. And that's basically, you know, what I'm waiting for. I mean, politically, the river still hasn't caught fire yet. Or I wrote another article a year later, called Roasting Wieners at the Pier, which is basically, the river has caught fire, and instead of doing something about it, we're sitting on the pier roasting hot dogs. And that's the situation we're in right now, and I keep wondering how bad things have to get before they realize. And I had someone tell me, well, you know, that the economy isn't Bush's fault, so boom, bust, boom, bust. I said, yeah, it's boom when a Democrat gets in, and it's bust when a Republican gets in. I mean, how simple can you get? You know? And, of course, now we have these lovely little words to distract us from the fact that nobody can find a job. I've been out of work for a long time. I know other people have been out of work for a long time. The people I do know that are working, are working 50, 60 hours a week. What kind of life is that? What kind of lives are we living here in this country? But unfortunately, people are stupid, so we're going to get a musclehead God only knows. Well, he can't run for president. Thank God for that. Thank God Schwarzenegger can't run for president, because I don't believe he was born in this country. But he can run for governor of California, and we're going to be stuck with him, and the people of California are going to suffer worse. And it's a damn shame, and all I can say is that I hope in the long run things will get better. There have been other notable candidates, Arianna Huffington, who dropped out, which is a shame that she kind of dropped in anyway. She should have backed Bustamante and started doing publicity. The left wing is so disorganized when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, it's not just in California, it's nationally. The Democratic Party is very disorganized. Of course, Arianna is not officially a Democrat. She's an independent, progressive-type candidate, but she doesn't like the Democratic Party. And I can understand her reasons for that, and that's fine. But she went in, and then she dropped out, and that's a shame. It's a shame that she dropped in, really, because she should have backed Bustamante, who was the lieutenant governor, and told people vote no on recall and vote yes for Bustamante, because apparently if you vote no, you can still vote for one of the candidates. God help me, I don't understand that. It's just really the crappiest system, and it needs to be changed, but not until we get Governor Musselhead out of there. And there seems to be some debate about whether or not you could do that in 6 months' time or do that immediately. As far as I'm concerned, the sooner the better. Just put the recall effort in there as soon as possible. If all you need is a few million bucks and a few thousand signatures, you can do it. And the Republicans have been trying to play this game, have been playing this game for quite a while. And like I said, it's just one of three different things. They tried to kick Clinton out. They're getting rid of Gray Davis because they didn't like the fact that he won an election, and he stands in their way. And what was the third example? There was another one. Oh, yeah, they stole the election in 2000, even though Gore got more votes nationwide. Morally, Bush should have stepped aside saying, he got more votes nationally, and there's controversy, so I'll step down in favor of Gore. And that would have been the moral thing to do, but of course you're not going to get that from these people. These people have the morals of dead squirrels. And they're just the nastiest group of politicos that we've had in a long time. And they're taking over the country. They've taken over the country. So, anyway, we got one more thing to go on. This is a song that's been played by Bart Kopp for a while, and I'm going to grab it because it's going to segue into our next segment, which is about our favorite right-wing talk show hosts getting in some trouble with the law and getting in some trouble by speaking out publicly when he's not locked up into the bubble. Let's hear it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh.
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist. You please, everybody disagrees with my rap. I'm horrendous, I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling because I'm so full of bull, so full of crap. With condescending fries, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Hates his guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic putz.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am,
because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class,
because I'm a fat conservative butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey,
with the face of a horse's ass.
I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another
story. I have a face the size of a wash tub, and my ass is as big as Missouri. Yes!
This bastard is sick. He's a fat bomb as big and his ass.
Manipulating statements exaggerate the truth. I can't believe they hate my show. Inspires. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm a concentrated pile of human waste. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right. You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle classes.
I'm a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
They say that this is not about my vanity. They doubt my sanity. They think I'm nuts.
So nuts.
I am a cyst on the ass of humanity. New Republican slogan, read my tuts. From the bowels of age, comes the voice of Rush Limbaugh.
In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob.
Evil, rotten.
I'm the capo. The capo. Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo. The right-wing, foam-at-the-mouth, jack-booted slob. The democratic trashing. Years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet.
Oh, a grommet.
With the IQ of a fig, I'm a fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomit. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Straight pile. I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Straight pile. You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fear-mongering scumbag with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative
buckhead. Hey, sick Republican sleazeball. Fear-mongering scumbag. Egotistical ass bite. Mean-spirited, hog-wallering fat conservative puss.
With the face
of a horse's ass.
Rush Limbaugh, ladies and gentlemen, himself edited and snipped out. I don't know who did that, but he was a genius. He did a real good job with that. That is Rush Limbaugh, and I am a Nazi, and that's kind of an oldie, and we've played that before on other shows and other times. Other people have seen it or listened to it, and it's kind of fitting because Rush has been, as you know, in the news as of late, and it started out with ESPN's decision to hire this buffoon to be on the ESPN Sunday football show. Now, I'm a football fan. I like football. I live here in Atlanta, so it means I'm a Falcons fan. And I like Michael Vick in particular because Vick is a great quarterback, and Vick happens to be black. And, you know, it's really nice to see that they've finally started to get over some of these prejudices. I mean, years ago, they used to just think that blacks didn't have what it took to be either managers or coaches or football quarterbacks. It was thought to be thinking men's occupations. And, of course, white people, as the racists would say, white people are better thinkers and black people are better, have better physiques, you know, and all that stuff. And that's a bunch of crap. But that was the impression for all the years. And guys like Vic and the man who was the part of the center of the controversy, Donathan McNabb, is another one. I'm not necessarily an Eagles fan. The Eagles are a good team. They played the Falcons and beat the Falcons. But they're a class team. And that's tough, calling a Philadelphia team a class team, because Philadelphia has a reputation, especially when you're talking about hockey. They certainly have some of the meanest fans in the world. But the Eagles last year, when they played the Falcons, one of the Falcons, I forget who it was, got injured. And guys from the Eagles, guys from both sides, really, were there as they were getting ready to take this guy out because he hurt his leg, so they had to take him out on the cart there. And the Eagles came over and shook the guy's hand, you know, and all that. And after the game, there was like, you know, it was real. Unlike the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who I despise because they're gloating when they win, and they like to put the other team down when they win. And I really don't like that. It's unsportsmanlike. But Rush was on last Sunday, of course, and everybody knows the details, and he basically said that Donathan McNabb is overrated, and the only reason he gets consideration is because the media has a desire to have a black quarterback do well, and so they'll puff a guy up, which, of course, is outrageous. I mean, anybody who actually reads the news knows that, especially nowadays, quarterbacks are lambasted or praised on the basis of their skills, and not necessarily because of their skin color, and not because of their skin color at all, really. I mean, they used to have that problem. I mean, I remember when Doug Williams led the Washington Redskins to the Super Bowl, the first black quarterback to do that, and the reporter asked him, you know, how long have you been a black quarterback, which is a ridiculous question. And this wasn't that long ago. This was in the 80s. You know, we're not talking about the deep, dark days of segregation and all that stuff in the 60s and so. This was in the 80s. And, you know, I think we've gotten all past that, especially since we see so many black quarterbacks who are doing very well. Steve McNair of the Tennessee Titans. Of course, Michael Vick, who now, you know, he broke his leg, but good Lord, he was the most exciting player in the NFL and is a good quarterback, you know, and is a good thinking quarterback, not just a guy with a good arm and good legs. I mean, John Elway had a great arm and great legs, too, and it took him a long time to get a Super Bowl. In fact, it took him until he got a good running back which is what the Denver offense needed. It may be a different coaching staff because we've got the same coaching people that were working in Denver. Dan Reeves, who is, you know, and I like him a lot from a personal level, but I think he's one of those guys where the game is maybe passed on. But that's another story. The crux of the whole story was that Rush was trying to put in this kind of phony conspiracy thing that, you know, the liberal media, even though he didn't use those words on the show, is trying to force social engineering on us. And, you know, they're making stuff up just because, you know, and, you know, we all really know that white people, but I mean, he didn't say that, but that was an implication in that. And it took a while for the noise to generate from it, but eventually the comments forced Rush to resign, or basically ESPN gave him an option of either leave or we'll fire you. Perhaps that's what happened. No one, of course, will ever know for sure because they're not going to tell us. But Rush resigned, and he is no longer on the Sunday Talk Show. And you noticed, I saw the clips of it because once they announced that he was going to be on, I wrote a nasty letter to ESPN telling them what I thought of their decision to hire him in the first place. But you noticed Rush wasn't in the studio with all the other people. Rush can't do that. They did the biography on Rush, and they showed me something. This was a while ago. I had forgotten about this, but Pat Sajak used to have a late-night talk show, and they were trying to get him, because that was when, you know, the whole Leno-Letterman thing was starting to flare up, and there was controversy about whether, you know, when Johnny Carson would retire and all that stuff. But there were a lot of people doing late-night talk shows. You had Arsenio Hall, and you had Pat Sajak, who was ABC, I believe, was putting him on. And Sajak was on vacation or something, and Rush Limbaugh was his guest host. Now, Sajak apparently is very conservative. He now has a show on Fox, so that makes me like him a lot less. Although, you know, my wife likes Wheel of Fortune, and I kind of like Wheel of Fortune. It's a pretty good game, but Sajak's a very conservative guy. And so, you know, he had Rush guest host for him, and the audience was just on his case. You know, he could not get away with the stuff that he gets away with when he's sitting in a studio surrounded by the crew whose salary he pays, and, you know, by his adoring fans who will, you know, just basically, you know, ditto heads who will agree with everything he says. And the audience was just on his case, and he couldn't handle it. He absolutely could not handle it. And, in fact, he had to clear the audience, and he finished the show in front of an empty studio. And that's disgraceful. It's absolutely disgraceful. I mean, could you imagine the job of whoever it was to tell the audience, okay, you got to go, you're being mean to him, you got to go. And he was going up into the audience to ask questions, so it's not like, you know. And then there was the time when he was on David Letterman, and he was being booed. And he didn't understand why he was being booed. And Letterman came up with the best crack of all. He said, you ever wake up in the morning and think I'm just a big fat bag of gas? And the audience just erupted with laughter. I remember that. And, you know, Rush didn't like that at all. Rush and Bortz and all the other ones, whether they call themselves Republicans or libertarians or whatever, and I've got my, you know, term for these libertarian schmucks anyway, like Bortz. You know, they just like to stir up controversy. And they get on the air because they suit the views of the people who were paying the checks, basically the advertisers, who are buying content. And Randy Rhodes, the fantastic talk show host down in Florida, who has a very good show, much better than this show, obviously, because she's been doing it a lot longer than I have. But she is on a Clear Channel station, and she can't get syndicated, even though she is the leader in ratings in her time slot, simply because she is on a Clear Channel network, and she's a left-wing talk show host. And the scuttlebutt is that Rush Limbaugh has told Clear Channel that if they syndicate her, you know, he's gone. He'll drop his contract for them. Now, she basically outdoes Rush and all the other ones in ratings regularly, but she can't get any consideration above and beyond that because of who she works with. Because the advertisers who pour the money into the radio stations, that Clear Channel hosts and stuff like that, are interested in buying content. They're not interested in ratings. They don't care because they know they're going to get plenty of people anyway. There's plenty of ditto heads out there that'll listen to the propaganda that they're sending out. They're buying content. They're buying propaganda. And that's what they're buying. And they really don't care about the ratings. That's why they can put up with the lower ratings for the Rushes and the other stuff like that. And Rush claims to have a lot of listeners, and he probably does, but not as much as I'm sure that they're saying that they have. And It's kind of a shame because us left-wingers have to do stuff like this. I mean, this is why I love the internet, you know? I can get on here and just ramble on about stuff and set it up on a server and people can download it and listen to it. And that's really cool. I like that. I like being able to do that. And I'm glad that more people are getting a chance to doing this. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are doing this stuff now. And that's really good. So it does give us a chance to get a voice out. But the truth of the matter is that Russian guys like them, they like to have that control. Because if they don't have that control, they can't get their message across. Anytime they're in a position where they can be challenged or they can be contradicted and shown, you know, how what they're saying is not true, then they wither and die. They can't stand that. That's why they have to control their message. Rush, from what people told me who tried to call his show, he's got like two or three screen callers now, and apparently he even has some guy that imitates him to see what kind of message that someone's coming out. They absolutely do not want anything that's going to deviate from the message of the day on the show. That is not what they want at all. And they work very hard to maintain that control, because if they don't maintain that control, they're not going to last, because their arguments are ridiculous, because their attitude is racist, it's homophobic, it's anti-American, as far as I'm concerned, because you're simply saying that because of the color of your skin, you're not a good enough American. You know? And that's really what it's all about. And when you get a guy like Rush and you put him on a mainstream show, like on ESPN, sooner or later, he's going to say something that's going to be stupid enough to make enough noise where he gets fired. And when it happened with him, it happened with Michael Savage, or Michael Wiener, excuse me. By the way, is that pronounced Wiener or Weiner, Mike? That's what I want to know, because either way, it's more fitting than Savage. You know, where he told the guy on the phone, and he knew it was a crank call. I mean, that's beside the point. He told the guy on the phone, on the air, to get AIDS and die. And that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of attitude. And they like that, you know. Howard Stern is like that in a lesser degree. Stern is just kind of like, you know, what a schmuck. You know, he's every episode is, take your top off. That's all I hear from him. Every time I'm flipping channels and his show is on, he's like, take your top off. And I'm like, come on, Howard. Grow up. Get a pre-adolescent stuff. But he's got 10 million viewers, and I got nobody. So what? I guess his way works. But I don't like to listen to it, and I don't like putting up with it. And anytime you put these guys in the mainstream stuff, where they have to appeal to a wider audience, they tend to lose it. And Rush is no exception in that. On the other hand, we Democrats have people, we on the left wing have people who can work in the mainstream. I mean, look at Al Franken. I mean, Al Franken is a very funny guy, and he's worked in mainstream television for many years. He was a writer and a performer on Saturday Night Live, although I didn't like him earlier on. He was much funnier later on, I thought. In fact, I remember in 1980 was starting, he was talking about how the 70s, he had a little editorial on Weekend Update, and he was talking about how the 70s was the me decade, and we want the 80s to be the decade of me, Al Franken. And it was so funny. You know, everything you do, you have to ask yourself, how does this affect me, Al Franken? So the 80s was the decade of Al Franken, according to him, and that was really a kind of funny thing. And he continued to be a writer, and I think he still is to a certain extent, a writer for Saturday Night Live. And he wrote, of course, the famous book, Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot, which put to rest, in a very humorous way, a lot of the crap that Rush spreads out daily. And he said the most fun of that writing that book was that he got to answer his phone. Rush Limbaugh is a big fat idiot, and he had gotten into a spat with another one of those guys, Bill O'Reilly. And Bill O'Reilly's thing is just telling people to shut up. If he doesn't like you, shut up, shut up, shut up. Media Whores Online had a Talk Like Bill O'Reilly Day, and they suggested that anytime you talk to somebody, just say shut up. Shut up! That's what you ought to do. That's what you have to do. But Rush got caught, and he got canned or he quit, depending on who you want to listen to, who you want to believe. But he's gone off of ESPN. And, you know, the guys who were criticizing him on ESPN later on were right. And he's saying, look, here he is. He says stuff like that, but he won't open himself up for an interview. He won't allow himself to be talked to. He just goes on his radio show and has his 3 or 4 hours of say every day. But President Clinton made the same comment about that, and he's saying, look, I got a little say here, but then he goes on the radio 3 or 4 hours in the air every day, and he has his say and his say and his say, and nobody is around to contradict him. I mean, that's not right. And there used to be a thing called the Fairness Act, where you had to give opposing viewpoints at the very least, and Rush doesn't really do that. They try to do that on Sherlock Hannity and Combs, where Combs is supposed to be the opposition, but you know, it's one of those things where they just throw in some lightweight to make Democrats look bad, to make left-wingers look bad, you know, and Combs is not a left-winger. I don't really care what anybody says. If you want to do that, get Al Franken on that show, and then we'll see him tear Sean Hannity a new one every night, and that'll be the end of that. And now it won't last very long in that sense, because they don't want the left-winger to appear good. Fox News, of course, is all propaganda. You know, I like Fox Sports, and I like the attitude that they bring to the game, but, you know, that channel ought to be closed down. And I'm not saying Rush Limbaugh ought to be taken off the air. He's got a right to say what he wants, but what he doesn't understand is that people have a right to comment on that. And if he doesn't like that, he can, like a Mr. Conservative in the religion and politics, he can go live to Russia and China, because that's the way they did things there. So I'm going to end it with that there, and it's been about an hour or so talking, and that's pretty good. Really, I've been doing it in segments, because this is pre-recorded. This is not live. Those of you who are trying to call in to our toll-free number, 1-800-NO-WAY, which doesn't exist, don't call that number, have been fooled, because we don't have a phone number. And we're just doing the show, recording it, and setting it out on the web. So I will talk to you as soon as I can next week, or maybe in a couple of days, just whenever I feel like putting these shows together. This is our first test run, and hopefully we'll get better as we go along. And I'm going to try to get some guests and do some other things. So I'm going to leave you, and take care. This is Joe Vecchio, and this is the Cup of Joe radio show. The other one is 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 the other one is